The next two cases that were scheduled, the arguments have been vacated and they'll be submitted on the briefs. So we'll move to the following case, which is Jerome Maher versus the FDIC. We'll wait till everybody gets settled here. Who's Mr. Tuohy? You're Mr. Tuohy?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
Kevin Tuohy on behalf of my clients, Jerome Maher, to my left, and John Gervais, who is standing there, both of whom have been long time.
Better get up to the mic, because we can't hear you way back there.
That was not intentional, Your Honor.
Okay.
To begin with, Judge, I should tell the court that 40 years ago last month, I first argued before the U.S. Court of Appeals here. And I was able to bask.
There's only one of us that remember that far back.
I was able to bask in the sunshine of my brilliance for a while because I won 3-0. And then another counsel came in and took the case because the petition for certiorari was granted. And the sunshine of my brilliance suddenly ended with a 9-0 decision by the U.S. Supreme Court reversing this court. However...
Well, maybe you'll lose this one 3-0, but then you won't have that problem.
Well, I hope that's not a prejudgment, Your Honor. Your Honor, this case involves the contractual employment rights of two longtime employees of what I'll call the late Horizon Federal Savings and Loan. Mr. Maher was with them for over 27 years. Mr. Gervais had been president for the past 10 years before it was taken over in January 1990, pursuant to it being put into a receivership. Now, that was done in what I consider to be a very complicated situation. Congress had passed a law which prohibited the accounting procedures that the regulatory agencies had fostered with many savings and loans so that they would help savings and loans who were in deep financial trouble and take them over.
At what point did the Rabbi Trust be transferred into a whatever the other trust was?
The Secular Trust.
Secular Trust, thank you.
Your Honor, it was done in, I believe it was in late 88. And the distinction between the two, of course, is with the Secular Trust, the assets of the trust are no longer reachable by creditors. The same agreement that created the Rabbi Trust was amended to create the Secular Trust. This was the contract of employment providing for pension and retirement rights for the two plaintiffs herein. That agreement also said that in the event that any provision is unenforceable, the remainder of the agreement shall be enforced. Now, Williston, which we cited in our brief, says that is a very legitimate way to preserve your rights, and also Williston says that if you may sue on the overall agreement, and if you lose, you may sue on the rest of it. Williston cites a Seventh Circuit case, so holding, which we cited. It's I refer to it frequently as the Kelly case. Kelly was the defendant. In any event, the Court of Appeals, in the case that litigated the fact that the Secular Trust was unenforceable, that is this Court of Appeals, also held in the very last paragraph of their decision. However, we wish to note that our holding does not suggest that the plaintiffs have no vested contractual rights to their deferred compensation. In other words, the Rabbi Trust. It means only that the property interests plaintiffs acquired as a result of the trusts are void, meaning, of course, the secure trust, and the trust assets will be shared by all persons with proper claims against Horizon. Now, the basic law, as we've called it, FIREA, provides that there is a fiduciary duty by the federal receiver, which was the predecessor of the FDIC. There is a fiduciary duty to all claimants. My clients were claimants. As a matter of fact, my clients filed a claim against the receiver of Horizon. But that receiver suddenly transferred all its assets and all of its liabilities to a conservator. In my history as a married man of over 41 years, I wish I could have transferred a lot of my liabilities. It was very unusual. But
if you even under the Rabbi Trust, you're basically a general creditor.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree.
Isn't that the whole point of the Rabbi Trust?
It would
be available to all general creditors, and obviously that wouldn't be a factor unless the company went into bankruptcy.
Well, you are a creditor. Your Honor refers to it as a general creditor. That's true.
You've got no priority.
That's where it's incorrect. The FIREA preserves state law claims. This is, of course, a state law claim. And under the Illinois statute, employees' employment rights, that is, salary, so on, pension, so on, under Illinois law, those get priority. Now, they don't get priority against each and every other secured claim, but they get priority, as we cited in our brief. So, certainly, as opposed to creditors who are general creditors, unsecured, we come before they do. Nevertheless, though it appears to us, and the FDIC has not denied it, that all creditors were paid. We were paid nothing as far as our pension was concerned. We haven't gotten it. And bearing in mind the predecessor of the FDIC came to Maher and Gravet asking them as the top officers of the Wilmette Federal Savings and Loan, the predecessor of Horizon, please accept these failing savings and loans because if you don't, they're going to go under.
It's back in 1980 or so, wasn't it?
82. Yeah. They did, and they were assured, give up your pension rights. And when the new institution, Horizon, gets back on its feet, we will restore them. And they did shortly afterwards, as the new institution got back on its feet.
Under Horizon.
Horizon. Now, there is a little problem when we talk of Horizon. Very frequently, the FDIC and the RTC before them has referred to New Horizon and Old Horizon. Old Horizon was who Maher and Gervais worked for until a receivership was created in January of 1990. And then, at the same time, the Resolution Trust Corporation, which took over as receiver, predecessor FDIC, they created what they called New Horizon, a brand new bank. And New Horizon became the conservator, while Old Horizon was in receivership. We filed our claim against Old Horizon. Nothing happened. We also demanded of Harris Trust our pension under the provisions of the secular trust.
You've only got a minute left. Do you want to reserve it, or do you want us to keep going?
I do want to reserve it, Your Honor.
All right, you better stop then.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Richmond.
May it please the court, my name is Lawrence Richmond. I represent the FDIC in its corporate capacity. We ask the court to affirm the judgment below. There are three very good and independent reasons to do so. First, res judicata. As the district court correctly found, the appellants have had a full opportunity to litigate any and all questions or issues they had with the receiver for Horizon. That was all run through the process, resulted in final decisions in 1994 and a decision by this court in 1996. And they've offered no basis for why that rule shouldn't apply here. The only argument they make on that point is that this particular issue wasn't litigated, but as the district court correctly pointed out, that doesn't help them in res judicata because that rule covers claims that were or could have been litigated. And there's no reason they could not have made such an argument.
Counsel, this is probably very basic, but would you explain the difference between your corporate capacity and your governmental capacity?
Well, the difference, Your Honor, is corporate versus receiver. A receiver, corporate, is the capacity as the insurer, as the body that provides the insurance for the institutions generally. Receivers are appointed for each particular institution. When the receivership has been concluded, those receivers go out of existence. And it has been well settled. We've cited cases in our brief that corporate is not liable for liabilities of a particular receivership. That's those cases, the Roldan Fonseca case, for example, in the First Circuit.
And this receivership went out of business in, 1990?
It terminated as of January 1st, 2002. So it was wound up. Actually, while not in the record, I think the court could take judicial notice of the fact that publication notice of termination of this receivership was provided in 1999, both the Federal Register and in USA. The other, quite apart from res judicata, which the district court found entirely sufficient to dismiss these claims, is the question of the FIREA claims process. Basically, that process, you must file a claim first with the receiver, and then under very strict time deadlines, if you are unsatisfied or the receiver doesn't respond, you have to file a lawsuit. In this case, first of all, this court's already ruled in 1996 that there was no compliance with the claims process. Even if you put that aside, the basic problem the appellants have is if this is a new claim, somehow new, well, then they never file the administrative claim, and they can't comply with the claims process. If, however, it is an old claim somehow related back to the other one, well, the time period for filing a lawsuit, which is roughly 8 months from the time you file your claim, long expired. The latest that a lawsuit could have been filed was in 1992. So whether it's an old claim or a new claim, again, as the district court quite correctly found, they would have no basis for proceeding, and the court would have no jurisdiction.
Here, go back to that date thing. I'm looking at, I think it's your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
On page 8, that the Horizon receivership, the only entity against which they could recover on those losses, went out of existence effective January 1990.
We apologize, Your Honor. That is a typographical error. It should be 2002. I believe that is stated elsewhere in the brief, and the documentation in the supplemental appendix makes clear that the termination notice was 1999. The supplemental appendix site would be supplemental appendix at 109 shows the termination date. We apologize for that typographical error.
Okay.
There's yet a third reason, we don't believe you need to find more than one, but the third reason is this question of mootness. And that is, with the termination of the receiver, there is no entity from whom any recovery could be obtained. The district court did not rule on that, but it is an independent basis. We submit that there's nothing unfair about that. Again, the appellants had a full opportunity to litigate. This receivership was open for 13 years. The FDIC considered their claims long dead and therefore had no reason to keep this receivership open against the expectation that these appellants might someday reappear. So this case perfectly meets the requirements of mootness in that there is no effective relief possible. Unless the court has questions, we would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Okay, thank you. You've got about a minute left, Mr. Tuohy.
Your Honor, the very first thing is this lawsuit before Judge Pallmeyer was brought pursuant to ERISA, Employment Retirement Income Security Act. Judge Ginsburg, in the Alley case in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the federal district, said that ERISA trumps FIREA. They didn't even go through the process in Alley, and this is before Judge Ginsburg went to the U.S. Supreme Court. She said it trumps it, so you don't have to. And that's what she said. As far as what we did file the lawsuit. We attempted before the U.S. Court of Appeals in the district court back in 1990 to enforce the contract. Now, there was a little thing called the Tucker Act, and in that case, as well as the case where we filed the counterclaim in 1994, the court held no jurisdiction and transferred the case in 1994 to the Federal Claims Court. How can one say that you're barred by res judicata when the court said they had no jurisdiction? Can't do it. That's clearly Illinois law on res judicata, and I believe it's also the law here. And Illinois law, as we pointed out in the Saxon case, has so held. And FIREA says that we should follow the law of the states unless there's a conflict, a clear conflict, with FIREA. Then counsel refers to the termination. We got no notice of that termination of the receivership in 2002. And as we all know, notice reasonably calculated to inform is what's required when you're taking away people's rights. We got no notice. We didn't know about it until the very filing of this agreement that they showed with their termination papers, and that agreement also assigns any liability to the FDIC that the receiver might still have. And we cited a case from California showing that where they failed to pay creditors ratably, the FDIC had to pay.
Okay, your time has run out, so we'll have to take that.
All right, Your Honor, and I will limp out as opposed to running out.
Well, we won't chase you. So, all right.
Thank you,
Chuck. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.